Hello and welcome to Cage Club. Two fans, 85 movies, one cage. This is episode 90, Mom and Dad from 2018. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today, very special guest, two qualifications I want to give this guy. Number one, the most patient guest we've ever had in terms of us figuring our technical difficulty bullshit out. But number two, only our second guest on the podcast who ever have met the man himself, Mr. Nicolas Cage. We have Greg McLennan. Hello, Greg.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for bearing with us as we struggled on this 90th episode to get our act together.
I'm mostly just disappointed that you guys are only 85 movies, but 90s episodes. Like, how did you do five episodes without having seen a movie?
What did we do? Oh, so
we had an award show was one of them.
Yes.
Okay, I just didn't want to come into your podcast and shit all over it, but no. I had some curiosity that we didn't sort out beforehand.
Snowden, Minnesota, after we saw it in theaters.
But before we did a full Fair episode enough. About that. And we also did, we did a movie, Welcome
SNL?
To Hollywood. Which he's
in. Hollywood by Adam Rifkin, which he was billed in but never showed up in. Which is still, I still recommend that film.
There's been some weird stuff here and there.
And then our Marco interview was
And our Marco interview. Yeah, we interviewed Nicolas Cage's stand-in for 12 years, Marco Kiris, who's also, you may know him as the pizza guy in Matchstick Men, who delivers pizza a couple times.
Okay. So. Yeah, his daughter loves pizza.
Yes, she does.
And ice cream.
And ice cream. Yeah. So before we talk about Mom and Dad, the movie that we're here to talk about, I am jealous of you, sir, because I lived in Austin for 2 years, and then I move away, and within 6 months, you hold the Caged, the fourth Caged, I believe, right? And you get him, the man himself, in the room.
Yeah, were you able to come to any of the other ones?
I saw the first one in Yonkers.
Okay, so you were there whenever I went up there for Yonkers. One was just kind of a goof. Being like, hey, this is a ridiculous thing. And then it sold out really fast. And then his birthday was rolling around again the next year. And then it was like, well, this would be irresponsible to do this, right? So I just kind of jokingly said it. And then I did it. And then it sold out really fast again. And then I was like, oh, man, I think this might be a thing. And Elijah Wood's a pretty good friend of the Fantastic Fest in the Draft House.
Yep.
And so whenever the Trust was playing at South By, he invited me out to go to the premiere as his guest and to hang out at the after party with Cage.
That's so cool.
And I was like, oh my god, this is a dream come true. I meet up with Elijah and he goes, dude, I just got a text message, Cage isn't coming, he doesn't feel good. And I was like, shit, he put his heart into trying to get Nicolas Cage to come, but he just couldn't come. So year three, I got a very nice note written from Nicolas Cage to me that I shared with the audience. Then he said, if you do this again next year, you can bet your ass I'll be there. I asked Elijah to reach out, he reached out, but it went to a dead space.
Oh, no.
And I did everything I could. And then ultimately, I just got connected to his manager. I emailed, then they called me. I called them back, because it's like a lady calls you to then connect you. And it was like, hi, I'm Greg. And I'm like, oh, are you the Caged guy? And I go, I am the Caged guy. I really like that, his management knows who I am, because then it seems very genuine that that letter was genuine that Elijah got me.
That's awesome.
But yeah. He got me on the phone, and he goes, hey, tell me about this thing, because I forwarded your email to Nicolas, and he goes, yes, let's do this. And I was like, dope.
Oh, man. That is so cool. Yeah, he was supposed to be, I think he was supposed to be at the Trust, because I saw the Trust at South By when the directors were there and Elijah was there.
Yeah, he was supposed to be there.
Yeah, and so that was devastating, because I was like, there's a chance that he's there, so I need to make sure that I drop everything I'm doing and go, because that was the only movie I saw at South By. I saw the Trust, because I'm like, he might be there, I just want to be in the same room as him.
And yeah, he was supposed to come, he was supposed to go to the after party, we were supposed to have a whole thing, and it just all fell apart.
And I saw the video of his appearance at the fourth one, and I got to say, I feel like he made good when he showed up on that appearance.
It was crazy, because he flew in the day before, and we were going to go out to have dinner with his manager, who was like, I got to see what this shit is. And so, that dude flew into Austin, and then, his agent flew out into Austin, because they were like, hey, I want to go to this thing. Me and Tim League and his wife, Carrie, Tim, rents a private room at a restaurant, so Nicolas Cage won't be bothered. Then Nicolas Cage, apparently got off the plane and wasn't feeling good. And wanted to rest up for the day, for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
He was planning on sitting for the whole marathon. And then, he didn't show up. So we have dinner with his manager and agent. And then the next day, an hour before Caged happens, I met Nicolas Cage for the first time. But it was funny because his manager was like, hey, Cage is thinking about reading a short story of his own or a Telltale Heart beforehand. Do you guys have time for that? And I go, yeah, we have time for either of those. Whatever he wants to do, he can do both of them if he wants. He goes, okay. And then, whenever I meet Nicolas Cage, it's a black car waiting behind the theater. They text me. It's like, hey, you want to come meet Nick? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. I walk behind the theater, just like a black door opens, like that beautiful, like Italian, like brown leather coats blowing in the wind. And like Nicolas Cage just extends both of his arms. He goes, Greg, I have been waiting to meet you.
Oh,
and I go,
man.
This is the weirdest thing that you could possibly have said to me. And then I go, not going to lie to you, I'm going to hug you whenever you come out, because I feel like people have really wanted to see me hug you for 3 years. So I should hug you in front of them as a gift to everybody. He goes, we're definitely going to hug. He's like, but they told you that I was going to do a cold reading of Poe's Telltale Heart, right? And I was like, yes, whatever you want to do. But I had no understanding that he was going to do it in its entirety, or that he wasn't going to say anything at all to the audience whenever he walks in. He was just going to walk in, give me a hug, and then start reading the most impassioned reading of Telltale Heart that I've ever seen. So I was like, I just got out of the way, because he's like, I'm going to grab your microphone. I was like, okay. And then I just, like, he started going. I was like, I'm just going to get completely out of this equation, because I don't want anything to interrupt this.
That's amazing. My favorite part about that story is that, like, his manager asked for permission. Like, can he do this?
Yeah, like, I'd asked him, I was like, hey, if you want to pick the movies, because normally I do, and like, I sent him the lineup that I was going to do for Caged 4, and he's like, oh my god, I just spent, like, 2 weeks, like, agonizing on what movies of his own did he want to play for himself.
What did the lineup end up being that night?
I'm trying to remember. I think we started with Bangkok Dangerous.
Great.
Into Joe.
Oh, nice.
Into Army of One.
Oh, nice.
Into Bringing Out the Dead.
That's
and then we
solid.
Finished it with Lord of War.
Oh, wow, a fiver. Wow.
Yeah, we always do five. Always five. New York only gets short chance whenever we go out there, because they have a harder time freeing up the space in the theaters. But Austin, yeah, we can run rampant. We got theaters galore.
That is crazy. Mike and I saw the Rocky Marathon in Yonkers. We saw all seven in a row, and that almost killed us. But that was, you know.
We went to a five-film Schwarzenegger Marathon, though, for his birthday last year. So that was that was much easier than the Rocky.
I've done five. We've done every single one of the Police Academies back-to-back on an Easter Sunday.
On Easter
if
Sunday.
It ever sounds like it's, yeah, they were just like, well, this is a terrible idea, but nobody comes to the theater on Easter Sunday, so you can do it then. And, you know, we had like 100 people watch, you know, all of the Police Academies back to back to back to back.
That's so cool.
Oh my gosh.
I remember, like, the craziest one I heard when I was down there was you guys were going to do, I think, all three Hobbits and then all three Lord of the Rings or something. Like, it was going to be, like, 18 hours or something crazy.
I think that maybe happened once. I think the Avengers one was probably one of the wilder ones it was, like, all of the MCU. And then the Lord of the Rings ones are real brutal, because it's, like, they have a feast while you're doing it. And it's just after you get, like, your third course of food, you're done eating. But you have so much day left, and so you just, like, get a piece of food served to you, and you're like, don't put that there. Fuck you guys. And then, like, the server runs away. And then you go, well, I'm going to try it. And then, like, within 5 minutes, you've eaten it. And then you're like, all right, well, that one's behind me. And then they walk out with more food, and you're like, oh, this is never going to end.
I did a Godfather feast where I saw the first two, and they did, like, you know, wine pairings with five different courses. And even like that, like, just two movies and, like, five courses as opposed to 20 hours of food. It's, like, still, like, whew, okay, like, that's still a lot.
And then the programmer just comes out and goes, thanks, that's all the Godfathers they ever made. Enjoy.
And that's it. And there was never a third to be seen. Sorry, Mike. There is no Time to Charm here.
But yeah, no, like, Cage hung out the entire day. He was like the nicest, chillest dude.
He watched all five?
He sat right next to me with his girlfriend. And then on the other side of me was his agent and manager. And, like, he watched all those movies sitting in the theater, watching them on 35mm. Like, he was freaking out about, like, the weird TV stuff that we had found of his for, like, the pre-show and, like, Japanese commercials and was, like, laughing at them. he was like the night, and then, like, he got, like, between movies, like, he would, like, pop up. I told people not to bug him because I wanted him to feel comfortable, but, like, he was, like, super gracious with everybody. Like, he went upstairs and, like, filmed, like, a little promo video for us, and then we did, like, a 90-minute Q&A afterwards. I was just like, I'm not going to stop this until somebody stops me, and, like, nobody stopped me, and so I just got to keep going, and it was, like, one of the most incredible Q&As.
That's so cool. I'm so jealous, and I'm so bummed that I missed it. Are you going to, like, I guess you can't do another one, right, because you can't top that, so it's done?
I thought about bringing it back to its roots and just because, like, that day was as incredible as it was and as jealous as you can say you were. Like, it was a very, very stressful day where I barely got to sit down and, like, watch any
I'm
of
sure.
the movies.
Yeah.
Where I generally just, like, sit and really enjoy the movies with everybody. And it's just, like, I'm the dumb asshole that gets to stand up in front of the audience. But, like, anybody could be doing this job. I'm just fortunate enough to get to sit in this movie theater and watch it with all you guys.
Right.
But, like, that day it was, like, everybody from the draft house was, like, on deck. We had, like, our PR company. That came, and they're like, why didn't you tell us about this? I was like, it's a surprise. And then, like, weird stuff, like people asking for quotes and, like, news and stuff, and you're just trying to, like, get them to all go away. And it was just constantly a production to where, like, I had an incredible day, but, like, I was taken out of my incredible day constantly.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But yes, I thought about bringing it back to its, like, basics and just being like, hey, these are just people sitting around watching Nicolas Cage movies, but I promised that I would stop whenever he came, and I feel like I don't want to sully the legacy of it to where we kind of run it into the ground. I want everybody to remember, like, kind of that once-in-a-lifetime experience is, like, the last one.
No, that makes absolute total sense.
Maybe I'll do it, like, in 10 years whenever Nicolas Cage has 100 more movies.
There you go, an anniversary or
something. I mean, he's hungry for that 100th. I think he's talked about, right? Like, he wants to hit that movie number 100. So, you know, when he gets there in, like, I guess probably 3 or 4 years or whatever, like...
Yeah, I know, right?
It's going to be a big day.
I mean, castles and dinosaur bones don't buy themselves.
Or Action Comics number 1.
Well, we had to sell that.
We followed up Cage. After we did all Cage's movies, we did Keanu. And Keanu has been to Fantastic Fest, right? Have you met him?
I'm actually doing the Reevesolution this Sunday.
Oh, awesome.
Wow. All Keanu all day long. This mouth does not spill secrets, even when intoxicated. And believe you me, people that I know very well try very, very aggressively. But yeah, no, Reevesolution's happening on Sunday. But yeah, no, he comes to Fantastic Fest. I've met him before. I actually fought in Fantastic Debates 1 year.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I was changing in, like, the very small, like, office, he, like, walked and he goes, hey, man, I just wanted to say really good job, and, like, shook my hand and then sat down so people wouldn't bug him.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't wearing pants because I was changing. And I go,
no way.
This is a real weird experience for me because I'm a big fan of your work. I never thought that I would meet you, but it's really not how I envisioned it because I thought I would be wearing pants.
We won't press you for the movies. Are you doing 4 or are you doing 5?
Oh, always 5. Always 5.
That's... very cool. You know, I know you through, I mean, I don't really know you. I mean, I talked to you this past year, but, like, I know you.
We've met face to face. You can say you know me.
Yes. But I know you through Fantastic Fest, which I've been going to the last 4 years, which I absolutely love. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year. How many movies on average do you watch leading up to Fantastic Fest to see if they should get in or not? Like, I'm not sure exactly how that process works, but I know you watch Mom and Dad.
There's a whole programming team that does all the submissions and all the stuff. Whenever there's something on the fence or something, like Tim League or I'm like friends with a lot of the programmers will be like, hey, like, why don't you come and watch movies and, like, give us a thumbs up or thumbs down, or like, hey, can you watch this screener link because we're kind of on the fence. And so, like, with Mom and Dad, it was really funny because everybody had, like, their, like, email locked one, but everybody sent it to me and then gave me their password. They're like, don't tell anybody I gave this to you. I was like, man, 5 people just did this. And so, like, I got to watch it early, did my full report, and then people disagreed with me. But yeah, like, I wasn't a huge fan of that movie, but I was going to say, to preface that, as a huge Nicolas Cage fan, which seems like it's antithetical to dislike that movie even remotely, I did watch significantly longer cut of it because I rewatched the movie before I got on this podcast with you guys. Boy, is it breezier whenever it's like 84 minutes compared to like the hour and 56 minute version that
no
I saw.
No way. Oh, wow. Yeah. It was that much longer?
Well, that's what I thought was going to be playing at Fantastic Fest because I thought it was a done film, but apparently it was not. They were sending like their early cut in order for people to assess it to play at the festival.
Huh.
And at that running time, like, man, you do not get the sense of Brian Taylor doing cocaine and riding rollerblades.
No.
Whereas the version that I watched last night, so much cocaine and rollerblades.
I wanted a somewhat longer version, but not that much longer of a version.
Now, trust me, you really don't. Because I had a good time with it last night. And, like, the situations couldn't have been more similar where it was, like, me alone watching it on my TV late at night. It worked so much better this time because, like, stuff where there was, like, musical interludes where you would see, like, Cage doing crazy shit and just kind of screaming over it or something were, like, full drawn-out scenes in the verse that I saw. And so you're like, whoa, shorthand was your friend for this one.
Yeah, because, like Neville Dean and Taylor, I mean, this is just Brian Taylor, but, like, they thrive in that, like, 85 to 95-minute range. Like, I can't imagine anything that they do being, like, close to 2 hours. Like, that just seems like not their speed at all. Like, I think even Spirit of Vengeance was, like, 93 minutes or something. Like, I think, you know, that's just, like, then the Crank movies are right in there. Like, that's the wheelhouse. Like, get in, get out, and just, like, you know, cocaine and rollerblades.
Yeah, no, they don't like to waste time. I like to think that they have ADD that's just never gone away. They're just like, nope, I'm not interested in this anymore. Why don't we just wrap it up with a musical montage? Why doesn't Jason Statham turn into a gigantic kaiju? Fine, good, done. In the movie.
I loved watching it with the crowd at midnight at Fantastic Fest. I was hoping he was there. He was not there. But Brian Taylor was there, and also the kid from this movie was there, the little boy kid.
The little kid.
And him telling stories and calling him Nicholas, like, oh, you know, Nicholas was so much fun on set, was so great. But I asked a question. I said to Brian Taylor, I was like, hey, can you promise between this and Spirit of Vengeance that, like, you will never stop making movies with Nicolas Cage? He was like, yes, I promise. And the whole crowd, like, erupted into applause.
I mean, yeah, no, I would be happy if, like, he just Scorsese's his way into the sunset doing only Brian Taylor movies for the rest of his life. Like, they're at best incredible and at worst interesting pieces of art.
He always performs in them very well. It always gives, he's a good director for him. It gives him room to stretch and do what he likes to do, and he does that a lot.
Are you guys referring to the Nouveau Shamanic School of Acting?
That's the Cage. Is that the Cage patented school?
That's his self-described term for his acting style.
I love it. He did. I read on IMDb that he said this was the most fun he had shooting a movie in a decade. And you know what? About a decade before this was Spirit of Vengeance. So I wonder if it was like the most fun he had since that movie. I don't know.
I don't want to speak out of turn, and I can't confirm nor deny anything that I have seen since that he's done. As I understand it, there was a movie that played at Sundance that he seems to be having quite a good time performing it.
I mean, Mike and I are loving this renaissance. I mean, I know that I'm sure that you liked it because you picked it for Caged 4, but like Army of One blew us away and we were like, oh my God.
Yeah. No, that lineup, Nicolas Cage programmed that lineup.
Oh.
I had an entirely different lineup, and then whenever I offered Nick to program it, he goes, oh my God, I'll have to really think about that.
Okay.
And so I had a lineup of five movies that I was gonna play, and then Nick Cage hijacked the lineup and I was like, yeah, no, all about it, bud. And I think the only lap over we had was Bringing Out the Dead and what's the one, I already said it, with Jared Leto,
Lord of War.
Yeah, Lord of War. Yeah. But yeah, no, whenever he put Army of One on there, I was like, oh my God, because it had hit VOD not too long before we were doing that festival, so it felt kind of weird to play it so soon, but so many people had missed it. But yeah, like I was night one, like rental, watched it immediately. And I was like, this movie is such a bizarre, enjoyable movie. It's got like a third act stumble, but it's like act one and act two are so great.
Love the big G. We
love the G. I love, like, when he references himself, like when they say that, like, that Hollywood came to him and wanted Nicolas Cage to play him in a movie, I'm like, I don't even know what's happening. Like, this is like a meta level to a level that, like, I've never seen before. And we were like, oh my God.
That's Cage for you, man.
I love that he
can uncage the cage, but inside of that cage is another cage.
Yeah.
I love that he picked Bangkok Dangerous, because that was quite a surprise. After being a fan of the original one and then seeing what they did with that movie, it was pretty impressed.
Well, what was great is I invited him up before Bangkok Dangerous to be like, hey, do you want to say anything about these movies? Because normally, like, I speak really obtusely about what the movie is and why I programmed it. So I invited Nick up to do the same thing. And he goes, so this next movie takes place in Thailand, and my girlfriend's from Thailand, and so I wanted to show her a movie from Thailand. Anyways, this is me in Thailand, honey. He sat down and watched Bangkok Dangerous and had a Red Bull and had some popcorn.
That's awesome. You know, I remember when I went up to you at Fantastic Fest last year, I was like, I just saw Mom and Dad, I loved it. And you were like, ugh. So I was glad to see, as I letterboxd stalked you again, to see what you gave, and you gave it like 3 stars, which I think is like more in line. Like, it's not, I don't know that this is a great Cage
I should movie. I should preface before anybody ever starts to follow me on Letterboxd, though, because I don't ever encourage it. I don't begrudge anybody who does it. I'm always just like, really, you care? Because I watch a lot of garbage. I watch a lot of great movies.
Well, see,
I'm also like a super dick about giving anything like too many stars. Like 2.5 stars is where I go, you've satisfied me as a movie, and I am perfectly happy. Like 3 stars going like, all right, I liked you, you're good. 3.5 is whenever I start to be like, you're really good. 4 means I really, really liked it. And like 5 is the most elusive thing in the world. So like my ratings are hard-earned on that app.
Well, I just saw tonight Paddington 2, and I saw that you gave that 4 stars, and I was like, all right, like I know that you're stingy with your stars.
Probably a 4 or 5 star. That's a miracle movie. That movie is...
Yeah, that actually earns its stars, I feel. Like I've been kind of the same way over the past year when I started Letterboxd. It's only in 2018 that I've started watching more films I actually want to watch instead of just trying to watch a new movie every day or something, and those turning out to be bad. I'm realizing, oh, I'm watching a lot of like 4 or 5 star movies this year. This is
I have a movie night with buddies where like we'll all bring something that's a blind spot for one of us, and then we like just argue over what we're gonna watch that night. We've been doing this for years, and so like I saw like All the President's Men or like Dog Day Afternoon for the first time, like these like weird movies that you would expect that like a program at a theater to have seen, just like for whatever reason, and everybody has those like slip throughs, and I watched them and was like, man, Dog Day Afternoon is a fucking incredible movie. how have I have never known this?
I don't know.
It's like, you always knew that it was good, but it wasn't until like I watched it.
And you guys put out The Dog too, so you would think that like that would have been jammed in your face.
I got hired right around the time that we picked up The Dog,
okay.
And I was working on Mood Indigo while they were simultaneously cutting a trailer for The Dog. So I cut the trailer for Mood Indigo while they outsourced The Dog, and so I was pretty much removed from The Dog.
Gotcha.
By and large, other than like seeing a bunch of like marketing materials and like having to like work on the DVD and stuff. And so like by that point, I was like, oh, I get this story. I'm no longer interested in it, because whenever you like cut trailers or work in like marketing on a movie, you watch chunks of the movie so much that you go, I never want to see anything associated with this again. I really love I, Tonya. Like the very first time that I saw I, Tonya, I was like, this movie is so good. I'm so excited to be working on it. And now if you told me that you were going to like evaporate that movie from the planet and I could never watch it again, I'd be like, no, that's cool. Yeah, like I got all my watches in.
Well, Mood Indigo is a delight, so I'm sure that was a good first project. Even though I'm sure at this point, you know, you might never want to think about that movie again, it's wonderful.
No. I still think of it fondly, because we released like a theatrical cut, and then I really liked the French cut, but there's like a Blu-ray out with both of them on there, and it was like that weird thing where like I got to edit like my first kind of professional movie trailer, and I had to send it to Michel Gondry, and Michel Gondry's like, you're good at editing, and I just turned it into a puddle on the floor where you're like, but you're the best editor that there is.
I don't know what's the weirdest thing you've said about how, like, Nicolas Cage wants to hug you in front of people, or you met Keanu Reeves pantsless, or Michel Gondry is...
I specifically said I wanted to hug him and that we should hug. He just agreed.
Well,
but he did say he was waiting to meet you when he
got
out of
that.
That did happen. I mean, like, you have a weird job. Like, I don't ever get to have these conversations with anybody because nobody's ever asking me about this stuff, or doesn't come up casually in conversation, because you sound like an asshole if you ever have that conversation.
Sure.
But, like, whenever you're talking about it in the context of work, like, I have a really super weird job where I program movies for a movie theater and, like, get to have guests out and stuff. But I also, like, work on first-run movies where you get to meet a lot of, like, the people that, like, work on those things, or, like, have conference calls with, like, Margot Robbie, because she's a producer on I, Tonya. And you're just like, you're Australian and adorable.
Yeah, I mean, it's super cool. I mean, like, to the outside listener, you might be like, hey, you're dropping a lot of names right now. But, like, to us, like, I'm eating it up. I'm sure Mike is, too. I mean, it's all these, like...
If little me, like, ever got to talk to older me, he's like, get the fuck out of here. That's bullshit. And I'm just like, no, I know. I still think that to this day. Like, I think that I'm the luckiest person in the world, and I'm constantly happy. And if anybody ever asks me how I get into my job, I always tell them from my cold, dead hands.
I wouldn't give it up. Is there anybody you want to meet? Like, is there anybody you want to, like, start programming marathons for in the hopes of one day meeting?
Can I suggest one? Charlize Theron?
Charlize would be good. I mean, I've done a bunch of them. Like, I've done Van Damage. I've done WrestleMania. I got close to getting Kurt out whenever I did WrestleMania 2. I've done Denzel Washington.
Oh.
There's been a lot. I've done the Stallone Zone up in Yonkers and in Austin. I'm trying to think of other ones. There's been a lot.
I was bummed when Kurt Russell couldn't make it to Fantastic Fest for Bone Tomahawk, because I was like,
he got sick.
Yeah.
It was real sad. But, like, it was crazy, as Nicolas Cage's agent is the same as Kurt Russell's, and he came, and he was like, you ever do this for other actors? I was like, yeah, all of the time. people just associate me only with Nicolas Cage. He goes, like, what other ones? I was like, I'm doing, like, WrestleMania next. He goes, Kurt Russell? I go, yeah. He goes, we should talk. It fizzled out, but we got pretty close. I've always really wanted to meet Schwarzenegger, and I have technically once, but Tim League kind of blew it for me,
because
he was like freaking out about having to do an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then he goes, can you do the interview? And I go, yeah. And he goes, all right. It's like whenever he was releasing The Last Stand.
Okay.
And so during the movie, you were going to interview, and then Schwarzenegger was going to do a Q&A on stage afterwards. And so I was going to do the interview with Schwarzenegger during the movie. But then Schwarzenegger shows up and just grabs popcorn and walks straight into the theater and just stands and watch the entirety of the movie.
No.
Standing, he didn't sit down.
He's just standing eating popcorn.
And then
Tim's just like, just hang out here. Like, I'm gonna come with you, but like, anytime he pops away, like, we're gonna do this interview. And I was like, okay. And then it never happened. And then afterwards, like, the PR people were like, hey, this is Tim League. He owns the Alamo Draft House. He's like, hi, nice to meet you. And then I like stick my hand out, and like, he shakes my hand and walks by. And Tim goes, fuck, I didn't introduce you to your hero. And I go, no, you didn't, Tim League. He goes, I'm really sorry about that. The Egyptian out in LA did a T2 where they were gonna have Gail Ann Hurd, James Cameron, and Schwarzenegger out. And I know the programmer out there. So Tim was like, all right, I'm going to buy you a ticket to go to L.A. to go meet Schwarzenegger. So I went out there and Schwarzenegger called in sick.
Oh, no. Man, that is a common
but
problem.
But I got to see an evening with James Cameron and Galen Hurd and watch Terminator. So it was pretty dope still.
Yeah, on your boss's dime, too. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, no, I didn't have to pay for it, which was the real testament to the kindness of Tim League.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, whenever it came for, like, Nicolas Cage, we'd already put the tickets on sale before he confirmed. And I was like, hey, I have to pay to fly Nicolas Cage out. And Tim was just like, fuck it, do it. And I was like, you're the best boss in the world.
How do you say no to that request? Like, hey, we can get Nicolas Cage here, but we have to buy his plane ticket. Like, yeah, okay. Like, let's just get it done.
Yeah, I think his actual response was, he goes, why are you even asking?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, what I love about the Draft House is, like, you guys just, I mean, I'm sure you're very profitable and you care about that kind of stuff, but it just seems like you, like, want to provide, like, this singular, unique, cool experience that, like, you know, I get to meet Nicholas Winding Refn and just talk about Keanu Reeves with him, like, when I see the Neon Demon, or, like, just these weird things that, like, don't happen elsewhere or, like, only happen in New York and LA. And you guys are like, hey, like, let's just get these, like, really cool people that you love and just, like, watch their movies and talk to them about it. And, like, it's great.
I mean, I don't really want to, like, get on too much of a soapbox where it's, like, patting myself on the back, but I like to think that Tim hired me and, like, other programmers, and it's, like I said about, like, being at the marathon, it's, like, I'm not anybody special. Like, the point is, like, everybody in the audience is just as special as I am. The point is that we are creating this communal experience together. Yeah. Like, I'm just the lucky guy that gets to organize it. And whenever, like, yeah, we have a celebrity there, they generally just feel that everybody's just chilling and having a good time, and people get read into those vibes, and it's a real special thing. Like, I don't know how to quantify it other than it's like, it's a place where movie lovers go because it's run by movie lovers.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to, like, a company going, would you like to buy some $10 popcorn?
Yeah.
Please leave now.
The AMC is the enemy to me.
Well, right, but it's just like, yeah, you go to it, like, I mean, if you've been to Fantastic Fest in particular, but I feel like it applies to most draft houses, and I don't want this to sound too much like a commercial, but, like, you go there, and, like, there's a bar next door, there is at least, like, a horseshoe where you can get, like, a beer or something, and, like, it's a communal, like, kind of hangout space, and it as well as being a theater, and, like, and if you go to the theater enough, then you start to see the same people, and then you're like, oh, I've got, like, a group of friends now.
Yeah, I've been going to the one up in Yonkers near us has been pretty awesome. So, like, that's the only one that I've ever been to. They're doing a great job up there, and, like, I've only ever had a good experience seeing, like, two Predator movies there and Clockwork Orange, like, really nice prints of everything. So, always a good time.
I'm just trying to get Mike to come down to Fantastic Fest one of these times, because, you know, I keep saying, like, you know, it's a week of watching the coolest movies, like, every, like the weirdest, like, this specific branch of movies that I love, like, with people who are all there to, like, really be into it. Like, there's nothing else like it. South By is cool, but it's such a wide breadth of movies that you don't really know what you're going to get. But, like, Fantastic Fest, like, it's so curated and so specifically what it is.
But also, like, they've never let, like, the group expand, because, like, we expanded one year to, like, downtown theaters in Austin, and it just, like, it was split in the group, and there was too many attendees, and then they just put it right back, and they're going, like, no, we're gonna have 1,000 people come, and all 1,000 of those people are gonna know each other.
Yeah, everybody's just friendly. Like the attendees are friendly, the people who are there, like, as special guests are friendly. Like, you can just go up to anybody and just, like, talk to them about whatever. Like, you make friends just waiting. Like, it's such a cool environment, and, like,
oh yeah,
I mean, love it.
I have friends just from people who go to, like, the theater that have said hi to me, and then I'm like, I mean, I'm on your podcast as a result.
Yes, which we are.
I mean, should we talk about Mom and Dad at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you guys big fans? I didn't check your Letterboxd reviews. I don't feel like I get to throw you guys on the cross in front of an audience.
So I gave it a 5 at Fantastic Fest because the crowd experience, seeing it at midnight with the director there.
I understand.
But then I watched it again last night, and I still really liked it. I bumped it down to a 4 though. Again, like, it's a great Brian Taylor movie, but I don't think it's a great Cage movie. Like, I don't think he's in it enough to really warrant, like, that, like, upper echelon of, like, because we just watched this past weekend, we watched Moonstruck and we watched Honeymoon in Vegas, where he's, like, in it a lot, and it's just like, those are, like, what I'm looking for. Here, he's great in it, and he's in it more than he's been in other recent movies, but it's like, I want more still.
And I think there was that weird thing to where I felt like he was in, percentage-wise, more of the movie that I watched last night than it was in the one that I screened for Fantastic Fest. Because, like, he goes away for a while, and you're like, huh? I remember watching it the very first time, going, like, oh, there's little Cage ticks every now and then. In the edit, they really just compressed all of those Cage ticks to be there, to where his performance now feels more alive, to where you do want more of it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, there was just, like, super subdued Nicolas Cage, where it seems like he was barely registering that he was in a scene, all the way to, like, Nicolas Cage destroying a pool table with a sledgehammer.
Yep.
So this is the first time I saw it. I think I'm the only one who saw it for the first time.
Yep.
I actually really enjoyed it. I give it 4 stars. For recent Cage, I feel like this is a really good Cage movie.
He is
only in about half of it. Like, I checked, like, he comes home from work at the halfway point, but I feel like the moments we get are so good. Like, when he's sleeping at work, like, that was hilarious. We get him with a mustache. We get him playing pool. We get a lot of sort of him as a dad, I think, is really good. I mean, he is.
How did you guys feel about the air lick on the beer can whenever he's telling his son about his younger days of riding cars and fucking chicks?
That's one of the best. There's a great Cage freakout in the basement, but that Cage father-son talk is, like, one of the all-time greatest, like, in film history, almost. Well, recent history.
You fucked up, son. But what if I told you I fucked up even worse?
How?
Did you know that once upon a time, the Firebird was Grandpa Mel's car? It's true. He bought it brand new in 79 right off the line. Used his VA cylinder. Man, that car was his baby. When I was little, I used to watch him polish it on the front lawn every weekend. And by the time I turned into a dumb, horny, pimple-faced high school kid, just like they're gonna be, it was officially a classic. So long story short, I stole the keys, picked up my girlfriend. Yeah, this is before I met your mom. Took her out for a little spin. Pretty much totaled the motherfucker.
Cool.
Grandpa Mel didn't think so. I thought he was gonna crush my skull. But you know what he did? He sold it to me. And it wasn't cheap either. I'd have to pay him back every dime he put into it. And if I wanted to drive my senior year, I better learn how to fix a car. So I did. I spent the whole summer working 2 jobs. Pay back my dad. Here's $10, Dad. Here's $20, Dad. Here's $100, Dad. By the end of the summer, I had that bad boy cherried out from the ground up. Now, you talk about a pussy magnet.
Dad.
Chick magnet. Huh? Your mom keeps telling me to sell it, but I just can't bear to let her go.
Is that what mom always says? I can't bear to think about what must have happened in that car. Because of the accident?
No, buddy. No. She's talking about something else.
I'm sorry I messed up, Dad.
Come on, hey. Like father, like son, right? But if you ever touch that car again, I'll fucking kill you.
Mike, we've been talking for a while about, like, we want Cage as a dad, and, like, we finally get him as a dad, and it's like, he's kind of...
I want him as a cool uncle. A dad, I don't know.
Because he's kind of a worse dad. Like, I mean, aside from the fact that he's trying to murder his kids, like, he's terrible. Like, he's a terrible father, which is, I mean, for this movie, it's great.
Like, I do have, like, some problems with the movie. Like, it's not a 5-star, and it is graded as a certain genre of film. But, I mean, I like these kinds of movies. I like, it's not a zombie film, but I like zombie film. I like the crazies. I like crazy people movies, like when people go insane. It's kind of like Valentine's plot from Kingsman. Like, that's sort of, right. I felt like this was just happening in one sector or something. For that type of movie, I feel like it was pretty successful.
Yeah, I mean, I had a difficult time the first time I watched it. I felt like it flowed a lot better for me this time, with all of the backstory being an undercut of the tension builds,
yeah,
to where you'll see something fucked up about to happen. You go, oh, look at this really tranquil scene with Selma Blair and her daughter in a mirror right before it, like, turns into a smashed mirror and, like, her trying to kill her kids. I felt like it was so much more elegant this time whenever I watched it, but, like, I was really on the fence the first time. And there's a lot of those things where I was just like, I feel like you're a movie that's bursting with ideas, but you're having a very difficult time articulating them a lot of the time. I think on the rewatch, I went going like, I'm not going to get as much Nicolas Cage that I want. The Nicolas Cage I am going to get is going to be bonkers, and I just want to have, like, a good time. And, like, walking in with that, I had better expectations to where I enjoyed it so much more the second time.
Yeah, because I feel like it tries to say too much, you know, and it's like, just have fun with yourself.
I don't think it has a problem with even, like, trying to say too much. It's just that it doesn't fully say anything, you know, like it hits all of these touchstones of, like, parents' relationships with their children,
yep,
and, like, parents' relationships with each other and the nature of growing old. And it's like, that's a lot to stuff in a movie that you're going to have a 5-minute scene of Nicolas Cage singing and smashing a pool table, because you've got to have that 5 minutes. So there's not going to be a whole lot of character development or ability to flesh out these ideas, you know?
I'm saying that maybe there needs to be a fucking grown-up zone and a fucking kid zone!
Brent, honey, you think I want to be the one to piss all over your family room?
Do you think I want to be the one who has to build a fucking...
fucking family room!
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me see if I can take care of this for you, sweetheart. Yeah, I think I have something. I have just the right thing.
Oh, yeah! You put your right foot in. You take your right foot out. You do the hokey-pokey and you fucking work it all out.
And stop.
And you do the hokey-pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. There you go. Problem solved. You're right, honey. I hate pool.
Yeah, it's just like pick one, run with it.
Yeah, like pick a lane, stick it, and just stick the landing.
Well, I almost felt like it tried to be too expansive at times, too. I mean, we could talk about, like, the school and, you know, the rest of the world and what's going on, the hospital scene, but I almost wish it was locked in the house for an hour and a half.
I think maybe it somewhat inverses your expectations because it does try to broaden its scope at the beginning, and then you kind of end up in a claustrophobic, kids Die Hard movie almost. The shrinking scope, I get what you mean, and I kind of feel the same way, like, it's just... You wanted it to be either bigger, but obviously it wasn't a big movie. And so whenever inevitably has to end on kind of a smaller scale, even though you have Lance Henriksen show up, it's somewhat like of a fizzle after like starting with kind of a big boom. Because, I mean, they went for it with that baby scene.
That's what I was getting to. Like, I like that the movie, like, never really explains the why. Like, it sort of shows the how. It's the static on the TV or the static on the radio, but, like, it never goes deeper than that. Like, we don't really care, but it does take the time to, like, show a mother trying to strangle her newborn baby to a song by Roxette. Or like, the scene where, like, all the new dads...
I mean, the needle just... him, like, going, like, fuck you. Like, he's like, we're gonna have fun.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a... For me, there was a great vibe set up with the opening credits. Like, I got a real sort of grindhouse,
yes.
And not like a true grindhouse vibe, sure, but like a sure. Rodriguez Tarantino grindhouse vibe where, I'm going to bring this style and invoke this, and this is going to be a crazy
compliment
vibe.
That turned into.
I'm sorry. I did it the best I could.
I mean, Robert Rodriguez grindhouse. You know, like later years, Blink-182, Green Day kind of punk rock.
You know, like, just like that modern aesthetic sensibility of trying to make it feel trashier. It worked for it.
You have to applaud any movie that opens with a woman leaving like a toddler on train tracks to get obliterated by a train. And then smash cut into those opening credits. It's just like, this is exactly the movie that we're watching. And like, this is what this very specific niche audience wants. But like, man, like I'm just eating it up.
Well, what are your favorite Nicolas Cage movies? I don't want to like backdate you on your podcast to where people are bored, but I have a natural curiosity now. I'm sorry I haven't gone back and listened to them all to figure this out.
My favorite is Wild at Heart.
Okay.
Mine is Adaptation.
And those are the movies, not necessarily that it's your... Because I feel like there's a disconnect for a lot of people where you're like, what's the best Nicolas Cage movie?
Right.
Versus, like, what's the movie that, like, if you could... You had to come home for the rest of your life and you could only watch one movie, like, that's your Nicolas Cage movie.
I love that Adaptation because it's, like, a great movie, but we also get two very different Cage performances in it. So, like, that always is, like, a sticking point for me to have it really high up on the list. But I also love Honeymoon in Vegas, which we just rewatched recently.
Yeah, Honeymoon in Vegas just doesn't really hold up for me. Like, there's so much good about it, but it's such a clunky movie.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's a great performance, though. Like, I think because he's just crazy in it. Like, I'm more confident in saying that my favorite genre of Cage is rom-com Cage. I'm not as confident in saying what my favorite movie is. I mean, it's Wild at Heart, but, like, you know, It Could Happen to You is just, like, I don't know why it works for me so well, but, like, that movie and, like, Peggy Sue Got Married.
Rosie Perez makes it work.
Yes, all of it. I mean, it's just... and I'm also in love with Bridget Fonda. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
Man.
Where have you been?
Man, I can't say her name because I'm on a podcast right now, but everybody's going to make fun of me. Star of Peggy Sue Got Married is Kathleen Turner.
Yes.
Because Kathleen Turner hated Nicolas Cage during the production of that
movie,
right? Yeah, apparently him bleaching his hair and showing up with big teeth and like being kind of like that big character.
Doing the voice and stuff, right?
Yeah, the voice, everything. Like, he didn't tell her that he was going to do that. He just was doing it. And like, they were like, it's too big. He goes, no, it's the character. And I think it's right for the character. And apparently just really pissed off Kathleen Turner because she thought like she was giving this like earnest performance and he was doing this like screwball comedy that nobody else was.
We've had that a couple times where like, what was it? It might have been Deadfall. Like there's been movies like that, like his family has made where they've been like, you can't do this. He's like, well, I'm going to do it. And like they threaten to kick him off, or like similarly in terms of him making a screwball comedy that we saw in the remake of The Wicker Man, where apparently he and the director were like, we're making a comedy, and no one else was on the same page. And it was like, that's why that movie is so weird. But like, if you watch it from his mind, this is a comedy, like, it's great. But like, if you watch it just as a movie, you're like, what is going on here?
I mean, like, I laugh at that movie, and I feel bad. It's like, I feel kind of bad laughing at it, because it's so hodgepodge mismatch, like, in its execution, where it is the kind of definition of what people say, it's so bad it's good, which I never ever want to say about a movie. But I was told, I forget who it was, but it was somebody that was like a Cage Connect, and they were like, you know, if you want him to come, oh no, it was David Gordon Green. We were reaching out through David Gordon Green for year three of Cage, and David Gordon Green goes, you know, if you want him to come, you got to play The Wicker Man, because that plays to his favorite performances of his. And I was like, is that true? And so we played The Wicker Man year three. Cage ended up not showing up. And then at the end of the night, I programmed it as the last movie so that he could talk about it. And instead, it was just 200 people watching The Wicker Man from start to finish. And it wasn't even the director's cut, so there was no B's scene.
Dave Franco show up at the end of one of those cuts? Sonny himself?
James Franco? He's in the diner or something at the end, right? Because he's the next one to lord to the island. Yeah. Greg, what's your favorite Cage movie?
Man, I have a hard time. If I was going to pop in a movie at any given time, I'd probably pop in like Face Off or The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock, I think, is a more fun idiosyncratic performance, because it's Cage before Cage was an action hero.
Yes.
And it's really, really great. And you are watching him slowly figure it out during the course of the movie. Face Off, it's because he gets to act like a fucking lunatic while simultaneously trying to act like John Travolta. There's so much face touching in that movie. I think Moonstruck is probably like my favorite performance of his, and I really love John Patrick Shanley movies. Like, I think Joe vs. the Volcano is bar none one of the best movies ever made.
Love it.
So, yeah,
I don't know if you get that often, but I
very seldom get that. People go, wait, that shitty Meg Ryan movie? And then I'm just like, all right, pull up a beer and a chair. We're about to have a conversation.
I mean, I'm not arguing that with you. That's all I'm going to say.
I say that to my girlfriend all the time. She's fucking oblivious to it.
So I actually have a question for you. So we've talked a lot recently about, nowadays he's putting out like 5 movies a year, and maybe one of them is great. Like, in your opinion, like you go back to those like sort of 85 to 98-ish, where like there's just great movie after great movie. It's pretty much one a
year. You're talking about City of Angels time?
Yeah, you know, like that great movie City
of
Angels.
That was a joke.
I know. Believe me. That whole movie is just him sitting on things, looking at things. Like, that's that whole movie. Like, he's just sitting on street signs or sitting on, like, you know,
buildings. What does peach taste like to you?
If he puts out 5 movies a year and one is great and 4 are just like fine or bad or whatever, like, is that a good success? Like, are you looking for just one good one a year, or do you wish that everything he made was better? Like, does that make sense?
I mean, like, in a perfect world, and I think, like, ever since he made The Trust with Elijah and then Spectre Vision produced Mandy, which everybody's saying a lot of really good things about, like, I think that there are people who love Nicolas Cage as much as Nicolas Cage should love himself. And I think there are people that are trying to help him. But I think, like, he also got himself into a situation where he started to have to say yes to a lot of stuff, or was doing a lot of favors for people.
Yeah.
Or people were playing to, like, an interest of his and then exploiting that. Like, he was getting into the wrong kinds of movies. And, like, I mean, I don't know if I'd want them all to be great, because then that's too many movies to catch up on. Because as it is now, like, I haven't seen every single one of the movies that he's made in, like, the past 10, 15 years. I've seen a lot of them. You know, I enjoy some of them. Like, I saw, like, Pay the Ghost, like, a year ago. And I was like, this movie's pretty good. You know, I did not hate that movie.
That is an unpopular.
That's the one where he was this kid at Mardi Gras, right? Yeah, no. Like, I didn't hate that movie.
But Stolen is great. The Mardi Gras movie. Like,
Stolen,
we like that one.
I love Stolen. Yeah.
Maybe I'm mixing it up then. I'm mixing up my Cages, which is really easy to do because they're called like Rage, Stolen, Missing Car, like the upset parents.
So
The Runner. Yeah.
So Rage is weird because like the movie the Rage that came out has like this really flat ending, but there was an original cut called Tokarev, and I don't know if you know about this, but like at the end of that movie, the original cut, he like commits seppuku, like he kills himself, he stabs himself in the stomach and like kills himself, and like that's just not in the final cut. And just like, why was that cut?
I did,
like,
not know that.
It's like the original, if you can find, like, it's floating around sort of the dark recesses of the web. If you can find the original,
so it's right
cut,
next, like,
it's
to like my 46 minute cut of Star Wars.
Yes, exactly.
I think it's a legitimate foreign cut though, so if you have a region free player, you could probably,
gotcha.
It's the Tokarev is the name instead. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, they did it with a Jason Statham movie that was like released internationally as like Butterfly, but I forget what it was called here. It's where like he's like a thief with like amnesia. It's a pretty cool movie. But yeah, like I watched a screener link of like Butterfly, and then I watched it again. I'm like, Netflix is like, this is a way different movie.
Like, that's what's weird, especially about like film festivals, because like you don't know if the movie, the version you're seeing, is actually the one that's going to be released. Like, especially when like stuff right. gets delayed like a year, and I'm like, I love that movie then, but like I don't know what it is now. And like it's also such a weird environment where you're like, you're hit in the face by movie. Like, you're watching five a day for 8 days, and it's like, okay, like I think that I love this, but then you watch it alone by yourself in a living room, as opposed to in a crowded theater with people who are into it. And it's like a completely different experience if the movie's even the same.
No, absolutely. I mean, whenever like we do the marathons, I definitely think about how a movie's going to play with an audience. I'll let them turn on me for one movie, but I try not to do it for two, because like you'll be like, oh, this isn't a great Keanu Reeves movie or a great Nicolas Cage movie or whatever it is. You're like, but it's going to be super fun to watch with 200 people that like Nicolas Cage.
And that's the thing. Like, I just want fun. Like, I don't, you know, like, how did Joe play? Because Joe is that's a great role for him, but like, that's not like a fun movie to watch.
No,
like,
it's pretty heavy.
I mean, he got up on like, the second movie, yeah, it was Joe. And I was like, hey, do you want to come up and say something? And he's like, okay. And then he came up and just was like, he got to the edge of tears telling this like 10-15 minute story about Ty Sheridan's dad in the movie, who was like an actual like homeless person yes. that David Gordon Green hired. Nicolas Cage was just telling him that like, he's like, just keep your life straight, man. Like, you're going to be a star like after this. Like, you're so good in this movie. And the guy died shortly after. Right. I don't know if he got to, I forget if he'd gotten to see the actual like finished movie, but like he was just telling this like incredible story about working with this guy and like how much effort he was putting in and like what kind of life he had and like how his like heart went out to him and like how he hung out with him as much as he could and like what a profound effect it had on him as like a person and as a performer. And you're just like, wow, thank you for going so deep and so personal with a room full of strangers. And like, he did that all day. But yeah, like, I mean, he got people to kind of that emotional space before they ever saw a single frame of it. So whenever you watched it, like, everything just resonated so much more.
I guess that's the way to do it, right? Like, because that's a heavy movie on its own. And then you like lay that in. It's like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just it's kind of those special things that you try to do it whenever like you're programming a movie. Like, you're like, hey, we're going to show The Apartment. I think The Apartment is incredible because of that, this and this. And it makes me feel this because it's so much this. And you're trying to like communicate that to people as much as you can. So where you're trying to tell somebody that are like, hey, this is my friend. She's the most beautiful girl in the world. So whenever she walks into the room, you go like, oh, my God, I'm already in love with her. Because Greg's been talking about her for right. 5 minutes. Just like, Cage just nailed that. But then like whenever it was like before like Army of One, I was like, hey, you want to come up and say anything? He's like, nah, I'm good. he didn't come up again after he did the Joe one. He saved it all like for the Q&A at the end. But it was like the most that's on YouTube too, if you guys ever want to check it out. But like, he is very present. Like, there was an audience question that he didn't answer sincerely and in long form. Like, it was incredible.
That's great. Now, when you were doing the first three, were you introducing them and like revealing what the movie was, or are you just sort of vaguely talking about like, I like this movie that I'm not going to say because of X, Y, and Z, and sort of keep it vague?
Yeah,
and then, like,
it's kind of an obtuse thing, and then people find out what the movie is whenever the title hits the screen in 35mm. I had a running gag every single year. The fourth movie, I would talk about how much I wanted to show this movie, blah, 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 blah. And every year, I showed a little bit more of Wind Talkers.
So I'm a fan of the extended cut.
Yeah, the first year, like, 3 minutes of Wind Talkers played, and people were like, what the fuck, I guess? And like, there was like a couple of like random claps, and then like all Wind Talkers abruptly stops, and then like Con Air plays or something. And then the next year, I was like, all right, last year, you guys might remember this joke if anybody came, anyway, so I hope you guys like this next movie, because I have always really wanted to show it, because I do actually like this movie. Year two, we watched 5 minutes of Wind Talkers, and then and then year three, I pushed it to 15 minutes. But I felt like it would have been a weird joke to play in front of Nicolas Cage, so right. I didn't do it for the fourth year.
Was it you? I don't remember if it was you or somebody else, but I went to Dismember the Alamo 1 year, and somebody introduced, it feels like it might have been Ernest Scared Stupid, yeah. Where, Mike, yeah, I don't know if I told you the story, but Greg, I mean, you can probably tell it better than I do, but like, the night was billed as four random horror movies, like four unnamed horror movies. And so there were, I think there were four programmers, right? And each of you picked one movie?
Yeah. And I picked Ernest Scared Stupid. Yeah, no, I did that.
Yeah, because he went, because Greg went up there and he was like, you know, I really want to pick this movie, but like people, like they wouldn't let me. So I'm just going to show you the trailer. And then we watched the trailer for Ernest Scared Stupid. And then the trailer ends and then the actual movie begins. And we're all like, what is happening?
Awesome.
But it just played the entire way through. Like it wasn't like a Wind Talker show. It just like right before Killer Clowns, right before the Chiodo Brothers came out, like we just watched Ernest Scared Stupid. And it was like, oh, okay. Like this is cool.
Which I felt like made an incredible double feature. But yeah, no, there was like half the audience was super not with me. And like hated me. What I was really happy for is a lot of people turned over after watching Ernest Scared Stupid. They're like, this movie is pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Ernest is very endearing. I mean, for someone who started off as a marketing mascot, I mean, it's incredible right. Where he ended up.
But yeah, no, I do that shit all the time at marathons. It's like kind of a sadistic fun for me. And I think people like having their expectations played with. So I try to do something where I'll be like, all right. And then watch the trailer, but no, you're just going to watch the movie. Like, so we'll play 35mm trailer for all the right. Keanu Reeves movies on Sunday, and like, those trailers are definitely deliberately picked to play with people's expectations.
That's what's cool about it. But I think, like, why it works is because it comes from a place of love. Like, you are sort of, you know, pranking the audience, but like, you're doing it for a specific reason. Like, you want,
oh, no.
You still want a good
and
experience.
I legitimately like Ernest Scared Stupid.
I mean, that night was great because I saw Terror Vision for the first time, and I was like, oh, this is amazing.
I am in love. I saw that for the first time last year, and I recommend it any chance I get. So I know if people are listening, check that out.
Well, I was always going to do a very unpopular pick because I knew that everybody else was going to be going traditional.
Right.
Because, like, Joe, who got, like, the Coda Brothers and did Killer Clowns, like, he does Terror Tuesday in Austin, and, like, which Laird awesome. Does Weird Wednesday, yeah, which is why he great. Did, like, Terror Vision, and, like, RJ is more into the classics, which is why they did, like, that old Boris Karloff movie.
Yep.
And then I was like, well, I gotta do something super weird and energetic, and so I was gonna do Event Horizon or Ernest Scared Stupid.
For some reason, I thought you were gonna say Garbage Pail Kids, Howard the
no,
Duck.
No, that's too unkind. Those are horror for an entirely other different reason.
I want to talk about, going back to the movie for a second, I want to talk about how good Selma Blair is in this movie, because I don't think I'm too familiar with her in general, but, like, she's so good in this. Like, in the way that, like, just genuinely in the movie good at this, but, like, also that workout scene where she's just like, I can't believe that, like, it feels like she's like, I can't believe we're doing this scene, but it's, like, reacting to, like, the way that the guy is, like, leering at them, like, the instructor or whatever, sort of a stand-in, I guess, maybe for Brian Taylor, I don't know.
She was really great in that Todd Solondz movie. I mean, I felt like she was, you know, acceptable for as far as comic book movies go with, like, the Hellboys. But, I mean, even, like, in, like, whenever she was doing her younger day stuff with, like, Legally Blonde, like, she was great. Like, I feel like Selma Blair's been great for a real long time. You should acquaint yourself, sir. But, no, I totally agree. Like, I read an interview with Cage around the time that this movie was coming out on VOD. People were talking about how great and, like, unhinged he was. He goes, man, but what about Selma Blair? He's like, I had so much fun acting in this movie with her because I would be in scenes and I had no idea what she was about to do.
That's awesome.
Mm. Yeah, Joey, you got to still see Cruel Intentions, I think. You know, the modern Dangerous Liaisons.
I've seen parts of it, but yes. You know,
you guys have both seen Mark Wahlberg's Fear, though, right?
No, I have not. I have. We talked about that recently. Why did we talk about that recently?
Because we watched The Yards.
Oh, because we watched The Yards. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because nobody should ever stop talking about Mark Wahlberg in Fear. I was going to do Waldo Wahlberg, but then Mark Wahlberg's been kind of an asshole a bit recently, and so I was like, I'm going to let the Jets cool on that one.
You know what I love? Like, so Mike and I, like, the thing that we, one of the only things that we like more than actually recording these podcasts is coming up with new podcast ideas that we're probably never going to do. And, like,
Waldo Wahlberg is all yours.
We had planned, we recorded the first episode of the podcast, which is the Ben Affleck podcast, and then the week we did the first one, all that stuff came out about him. We're like, ugh, and so we abandoned ship. But we were going to do him, and then we're going to do the podcast for Wahlberg, but like, we come up with names for podcasts, you just come up with names for like marathons and just like bring it to the world and like make money on it. Like, that's like, it's the same, it's coming from the same place, like bad puns and like cool movies.
I'm torn between Walking on Sunshine or Christopher's Walk-in Closet. There's a lot of bad dad puns lingering up in my head that don't turn into marathons. I don't want you to think that this mouth only spouts gold and then finds a way to make it work.
So the one that Mike and I want to do the most, that I don't think we're ever going to do, is we really want to do Gyllenhaalics Anonymous, where it's just both Jake and Maggie movies, but it's just like, I just love that name. Like, I don't know, like, it doesn't really make sense, but I just love how that sounds.
And she also starred in a movie called Smashed where she was an alcoholic.
And I actually quite like Jake's work recently, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He was also an alcoholic in Stronger.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet, but I did.
You guys should just get shit-faced and watch Gyllenhaal movies. That's your hook. I would listen to that podcast. I mean, like, sure, I like Maggie and Jake Gyllenhaal, but if you guys want to get shit-faced and talk about Maggie and Jake Gyllenhaal movies, I'm like, fuck, I want to listen to these guys talk about Prince of Persia.
You know, veto that idea based on that movie alone.
Hey guys, welcome. We're getting shit-faced and watching Prince of Persia again this week. Maybe we'll say something different. It's probably going to be cool, though.
But I mean, like, that's just like every podcast. It's just like, you know, you need your hook. And like, there was a Funny or Die video about, like, you know, it's Wings and Wings, where we eat buffalo wings and talk about the show Wings, and like, just how dumb of an idea that is. But yeah, I mean, like, just get drunk and watch Jake Gyllenhaal movies and call Gyllenhaal's Anonymous. Like, sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to discourage you at all, but I do have a friend that I've never listened to his podcast, and it's called The Chicken Salad Boys, and I think they just talk about chicken salad. I'm not even sure.
I mean, there's an audience out there for
everything.
You find
your niche and you run with it. I mean...
I mean,
there's an audience for everything. That's all I know.
Absolutely. I guess we have to talk about the Sawzall, because that's, I think, the big takeaway from this movie, right? The Sawzall, because it saws all.
It does. And Nicolas Cage reminds you all the way to the bitter end.
There's a couple cool, like, I dare say action scenes, but like moments I thought that were pretty cool, like when the basement explodes, or that whole thing of like trying to gas them out, and then her with the matches, and I thought that worked well. The reveal of the little boy having stolen the gun, I thought that was pretty dark.
It was kind of like a fucked up R-rated Home Alone.
Well, actually, a fucked up R-rated Home Alone was another Fantastic Fest movie I saw a year ago.
They changed the name of it.
From Safe Neighborhood,
Christmas movie.
Better Watch Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is great. Like, that's an adult Home Alone. This is sort of, I mean, I wish, like, if it was more about the kids, like, because what's weird about the movie is that it balances between the parents and the kids. I don't know if it doesn't know which one it wants to be more, or wants to do both equally, but I almost wish that we focus on one as opposed to the other, because you sort of get a lot of both, but not enough of either, kind of.
Yeah, having seen the almost 2-hour version where it was predominantly the kids, trust me, you want as much of the parents as you can get in there.
I was actually thinking I just wanted one kid. Like, if she was an only child that had to fend off both of them with her boyfriend, I was cool with that, because I was actually a little confused about her brother. Like, it's a school day, but I didn't
catch if he was
sick at home.
That kid doesn't give a fuck, and he likes hanging out in pajamas. Mystery solved, guys.
But then her boyfriend's taking the SATs. Isn't that generally on a day when there's not, like, regular school? So I was just a little confused with, like, some of that stuff.
But I also don't know if it matters. I think that's the whole thing. It's just, like...
No, it doesn't really matter. But I just feel like they could have streamlined some of this a little more. I mean, not with a better edit, but, I mean, that had to be done script stage or something. I just felt like maybe a little less of everything and then just compact it, because I like the premise.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Like, and again, like, having seen two different versions of it and not knowing it at the time, like, I think they did a good job of speeding everything up. You get over the speed bumps of those things a lot easier now. I did not care for the kids. Like, I want them to fucking die. Like, you can't put Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair in a movie, even if they're homicidal psychopaths, and not root for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was actually pretty surprised they didn't end up winning, like, killing the kids. Like, I literally thought that's when the movie was going to end, because how else could it really end unless either of them had to kill each other? Was there a better ending by any chance? Because I am a little disgruntled about how the movie kind of just stops.
I remember it being very abrupt, but I'm trying to remember, and I think it might have been where, because I don't remember Lance Henriksen having quite so savage of a thing. I just remember, like, a doorbell ringing, and then, like, Selma Blair going, like, oh my god, I forgot your parents were coming, and, like, I think that was the cut, going, like, oh shit, they're gonna come and kill you.
That actually would have been a very smart ending.
And so I don't think it ends there. I think they incorporated a lot of the action sequences from after Henriksen and his mom show up. I think they just edited out where they would have cut to them and then have all of, like, the violence and action sequences, and then just had that at the end.
Oh, interesting.
Because where it ends now is they're just, like, handcuffed to that pipe or the pole in the basement or whatever, and it just sort of ends vaguely. I mean, I like to think after the movie ends that we don't see, like, they break free and murder those kids. It also makes me wonder, I mean, not that the movie has any interest saying, but, like, is the static ever going to go away? Or, like, is there going to come a point in time where, like, the parents are not homicidal anymore? Like, I don't know, but, like, it doesn't matter, but, like...
I think Brian Taylor just doesn't ever want to put himself in a corner of, like, throwing Jason Statham out of a plane and bouncing on some concrete. And then going, fuck, we're going to do a sequel now, though. How do I write my way out of this one?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it does, it totally feels open-ended, and for that reason, like, even if we don't pick up with this family, like, we could do a Purge kind of thing. It's along the same lines, like, thematically, even, like, with just craziness going on in the streets and stuff. So, like, you can make this sort of, like, a anthology-ish kind of sequelized thing going on, but I do wish he would have made up his mind, you know, would have said, like, here's the end, like, period, you know, exclamation mark.
I don't think that he had that point to make, maybe. You can like or dislike the narrative as it lays, as it is, but I feel like the movie kind of starts with the wheels already running. It's they're unaffected, but you're seeing all of these like chinks in the armor around their society.
Right.
And even they're starting to notice it until they themselves are affected by it. And I think maybe just kind of like the how this stuff just kind of like weaves itself into the daily ritual of the suburban life, which is why it's the movie that you watch. But then that not concluding going like, well, where does this go? And you're like, well, I think that might be the thing. Like, they didn't tell you where it came from, so they don't need to tell you where it goes.
Right.
They just wanted to show you the experience of what was happening and like how fucked up that is.
And I think like what works really well is that for a lot of the movie, you're not sure if Selma Blair is going to get affected because it feels like she's not going to. Like, you see it around her and she sees it around her and you're like, oh, maybe she's like on like one of the good guys. And then you're like, oh no, she's affected too. And like, that's cool.
Yeah. You know what I thought at one point? I thought she might have, it was going to be revealed that she was a stepmom. That she was stepmother, so it wasn't affecting her or something. Because I started getting into that kind of like semantic questioning with myself, like, is this like a Gremlins kind of thing? Like, is it midnight in what part of the world? Kind of questioning going on. Yeah, and I also thought maybe like once it was, you know, once she did get affected, I thought when the grandparents showed up, she was gonna like shake it off or something. You know, once they were getting attacked,
right?
You know?
Because she would have been technically unrelated.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, like. I thought the same thing. You did get the sense, but then you'd also saw like throughout the course of the movie that even parents, like, they wouldn't go and attack a kid, but they would still kill a kid if the kid got in the way.
Because Cage, you see that with Cage with the boyfriend, and he sort of starts the movie with some animosity towards him already for being older and everything and overprotective of his daughter, so he gets to get a couple hits in.
I don't know if that's called a couple of hits. He like ground smashes that kid until his head like bleeds,
but he keeps coming back. Like, the kid's indestructible. And yeah. I knew, like, you know as soon as he gets knocked out, they kind of linger on him there. You're like, oh, he's not dead, he's gonna
that was one of the best stunts in the movie. Like, obviously the explosion from the basement was incredible to like watch, like Cage explode in slow motion. But, like, that kid taking the hammer and then, like, flying over the banister, bumping on it, and then slapping into the ground, like, in the middle of the living room, I was like, man, that was some stunt work right there.
They did something that reminded me of, like, I don't know if it was, like, a Halloween homage, but when she's locked in the closet and using the coat hanger and then, like, successfully stabs the boy in the cheek with it, I was like, oh, look, like, you can use a coat hanger as a weapon. But this time it was like the evil person was using the coat hanger, not the good person.
I also felt like some of the score had some like Carpenter like synth riffs pulsing through it. Like, there was some like Assault on Precinct 13 almost like vibe to some of the things.
Yeah, like between the score and the sound effects, like there's not like a moment where you really feel comfortable. Like, you're not supposed to, but like you were mentioning earlier, like where it was like a longer scene, but now we just cut it down to like Cage like maniacally laughing at something. Like, there's these moments where it's just like something's not like visually happening, but like there's just like this pulsing noise, and it's just like it just gets under your skin, and he never wants you to feel okay at all watching this movie.
Right.
I was really interested in the way this film was cut, because like it disoriented me in a good way. Was it as sort of manically cut, like even when it was longer, or did they go to town on it?
You still got like the sense that like Brian Taylor was running through the kitchen on a skateboard to like film Nicolas Cage eating cereal, like in that opening scene. It didn't feel nearly as fast, and I felt like the movie that I watched feels really fast now, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I really felt like that through it too. Like, it was like intense. I was like, I'm getting the high that I want when I originally saw something like, you know, Schneider's Dawn of the Dead or something like that, where it's like, oh, look, it's like running and intense and stuff. But like, it's been a while since I sort of feel like I've felt that in something, and this really sort of gave that to me this time. So
you guys haven't made a movie in a bit.
Yeah.
One other moment that I really, really like early on is before the static happens, it feels like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, Cage wants to kill his son like twice. Which I guess is just normal parental wants to kill their kid.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of like the sense that... Because are you talking about, like, the truck?
The truck, but also, like, when his kid throws, like, that soccer ball and hits him in the head, and, like, he just, like, stares off into space and then, like, says something like, 10, it's not a guarantee for you, like, just keep it up, like, I'm going to murder you.
I think it's almost like just they know that they're making a movie where they're like, hey, the plot is Selma Blair and Nicolas Cage want to kill their kids. And they fully understand, because like they're from like a marketing music video kind of world. And so I think they fully know what they're making. So they are just playing with your expectations at that point. Like, they're playing their earnest, scared, stupid before showing you earnest, scared, stupid. Because they're like, okay, you're waiting for this to happen. And we're going to like tease it out a couple of times, because once we do it, it's just going to be homicidal Nicolas Cage trying to kill his kids.
And that's really what I wonder, because I thought about that while I was watching it, but if you don't know anything about this movie going in, I wonder how that scene plays. Like, you're just going to think it's, like, super, super weird. Like, if even if you know, like, the basic plot, it makes sense, but, like, if you know nothing about this, you're like, what is happening here?
Yeah, I think you know that something
weird is going on. I can't imagine a single person watching this movie in contemporary society not knowing that log line, though.
That's probably true.
Yeah, like, nobody would watch this going, like, what's that tickle scene about? Is he going to fuck his kid?
Well, if they didn't, you know, if they were going in cold, it would be a good sort of callback where it's like, oh, he is going to end up trying to kill his son.
I mean, it's just, it's super overt foreshadowing that plays with, like, horror tones.
Like, this is the kind
of tickle monster stuff was great. That's like the Cage dad stuff, Joey, that, like, I feel, you know, we've been jonesing for, is, like, just to see him, like, be fatherly and, like, fool around and, you know, be a goofball and just, like, be the dad thing, even though
these will be in your I Dream of Nicolas Cage Being My Dad super edit cut that you're gonna make.
He's been a good, like, father figure recently, like, in Snowden he was a father figure, but, like, him as a dad, like, you know, he's done 85 movies or whatever now, and, like, he's not really got kids in a lot of them. He's sort of, like, a loner in a lot of movies. Like, we even made a note that, like, he doesn't really have brothers or sisters in a lot of movies. He's just sort of, like, this force that exists in the world with nothing around him.
I think that's a big, like, part of the mystique of Nicolas Cage, though. Because, like, you'll have an actor, Tom Cruise is probably cut from the same cloth as Nicolas Cage, where, like, you'll see, like, an actor like Tom Hanks, who, like, is getting older, he'll get fatter, he'll get whatever, and, like, he adapts kind of the actor that he is and who he's viewed as a human person in our society, and it's reflective in the acting choices that he makes. Whereas, like, you have, like, your Tom Cruise's or your Nicolas Cage's, and I think there's a certain level of, like, ego that goes into a lot of their role choices to where they want to still be the leading man type. And whenever you're the leading man type, like, you generally aren't going to have kids, or you're not going to have siblings. Like, you're going to be kind of the sole focus of that movie.
Yeah,
and I think, like, he's drawn a lot to those because they satisfy, like, a certain part of his ego. Like, yeah, he'll go and make the adaptations and, like, other types of movies. But, like, generally, like, I think that Nicolas Cage still kind of views himself as the leading man type, even though, like, he is an older actor now.
And I think that's what we really like about the new Keanu movies, is that, like, he's sort of not settling into, like, character actor role, but, like, doing these smaller things like the manager in the Neon Demon, or, like, the dream in Bad Batch, where it's just, like, he's not the face of the movie, but, like, when he's on screen, like, it is about him. That's cool.
He's Neesoning.
Yeah.
He's Neesoning.
I like that as a verb.
Well, that's what also would be the marathon, probably. You guys Neesoning this Sunday? Fuck yeah, we're going to Neeson the fuck out of Sunday, guys. Well, it's like Neeson was a very varied and celebrated great actor, and then, like, he can, like, pop up in something, and you're like, holy shit, Neeson's in Gangs of New York, and he's the dopest part of this movie. But then, like, you know, he can make a commuter, and you're like, well, yeah, I want to see that. And I think, like, Keanu Reeves is like, I have this very, like, bag of luggage that people bring of me being this, like, badass dude who knows kung fu, and now that he's, like, older, going, like, I can't really do that for forever. I'm still gonna do, like, these John Wicks, because they play into the kind of, like, that older guy, but now I get to play around with the perception of the work that I've built up of who I am, and then play against it. I think those guys just are uninterested with it, and so they try to, like, change or use that perception against you. So, like, you see the dream, and you're like, oh, this guy's not got a bad guy, and you're like, no, he's a fucking terrible monster.
Yeah, no, because when we did the Keanu Club Awards, and we had a category for best archetypal role, because, like, early on, he did so many, like, stoner burnout movies. Even before he was Ted, like, there were, like, all these high school movies that sort of felt the same. Then he did, like, the cop thing. Most of them are not very good. And then he did the cop thing, and he did the blank slate thing, sort of like The Matrix and sort of Siddhartha and stuff like that. But, like, what we really liked recently, and I think he's, like, just sort of is that villain role, where, like, I think he started in Man of Tai Chi, which he also directed, which
in The Gift. Oh, Man of Tai Chi, yeah.
I mean, I hope you're showing on Sunday, but I don't want to, no spoilers. Between Man of Tai Chi and, like, The Gift a little bit back in 2000, and, like, Neon Demon and Bad Batch, is, like, it's this new thing that he can play with, and it's, like, it goes against, because he's, like, this handsome, clean-cut guy who's, like, the star, like, the cop in these movies, and that's what you think of Keanu as, and you're like, oh, wait, no, he's basically Immortan Joe from Mad Max, but, like, in Bad Batch. Like, he's just, like, the ultimate bad guy with this harem of women who don't want to be there with him, but he's commanding them. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, that's
so much more
Keanu.
Handsome.
Also, his, like, villain persona, he's very sort of imposing, and he's like a good-looking Frankenstein almost, where, like, he's just, I don't know if we realize that, but like we come to see just like what sort of like a physically big kind of guy he is, and like how he can sort of tower over someone like in the Neon Demon or something. It's just like, ooh, like he's got there's a force behind him too, you know, like this guy could be trouble.
What's weird is if like I mean, so I've watched, I mean, I imagine you guys have watched a lot of Keanu Reeves movies, and
seen
I have
yep.
It's weird to see how often where he doesn't always necessarily confront the devil, but he will confront and he wants to confront the source of either like life or evil.
Yeah,
in a lot of movies, and it's super weird to see like the kind of repetition of like this guy not trying to find out the truth about something, but trying to confront the creator or like genesis of something.
Yeah, religion and like comes you see up a it. Lot. Yeah,
and I don't necessarily know if it's like, I mean, obviously like a lot of the, like you look at like a Constantine, you're like, yeah, that's Satan, but like the Matrix is more of like an obtuse like philosophical version of it, and it's just like so interesting to like see it whenever you watch like 10 Keanu Reeves movies in a row, and you're like, wow, there's a whole lot of him trying to find the creator.
Yeah, pretty much from like 1990 through, like even the Man of Tai Chi is sort of religious, like where he kind of plays the devil in a way. Like it's
very, yeah, like that tempting sort of trickster kind of guy. Yeah.
What do you guys feel about 47 Ronin?
I was disappointed.
I walked in there expecting like the worst thing ever, and then I had like a super good time. It was like Gods of Egypt good for me.
I mean,
I was expecting like a live action Miyazaki film, but I guess my expectations were way too high.
And I had fun with it. I would never call it a good movie. I wouldn't accuse it of that.
I love the design works great.
Yeah.
So. A lot of cool creatures.
There's actually one thing that I as you are, you know, neck deep in Keanu Reeves, there's one thing that I have to recommend that you... There's some guy on Amazon who is selling a Keanu Reeves Journey to Success, this unauthorized biography. It's like 50 minutes long, and it is the craziest thing. It tracks
it's like
him
a conspiracy
career,
theory,
and
like
then it basically,
madman.
He basically builds up to blaming 9/11 on Keanu Reeves.
It's the thesis of his documentary. We wish that was a joke too, but like
it's not.
People are maniacs. I don't want to disparage anybody, but throughout the course of somehow like being thrust into like a certain level of the public eye through being associated with Nicolas Cage, a lot of people have come out of the woodwork to me and like sent me like Facebooks and like messages and stuff going like, oh my God, can you hook me up with Nicolas Cage? You're like, oh my God, you've talked to Nicolas Cage, tell me about it. And you're like, that's really weird.
Right.
I don't know him. I met him one day, and then people just over volunteer so much information, and it's weird what a lightning rod of attention Nicolas Cage is, while simultaneously being like another lightning rod for just the craziest people in the world.
The reason we started this podcast was because we knew that it was something people cared about. It was something that we cared about, but like we genuinely liked his movies. And like what really bothers me about the public perception of him, which I think we've really tried to dispel over these 90 episodes, is that like he's more than just a meme. Like he's actually like a great actor who can
do
absolutely,
just about anything.
Yeah. And people,
and he's one of the most varied actors.
Yeah. Like he's done literally every genre except for maybe musical and western. We still want those. Yeah,
western
know? And a pirate. He hasn't been a pirate, right, Mike? So we want him as a pirate, a cowboy.
I would love him to be, yeah,
and a musical.
I mean, they don't really make pirate films. I mean,
they'll replace him. They'll replace Johnny Depp with Nicolas Cage.
That's all we want.
The best ever.
I mean,
or Man of National Treasure 3 could be a time traveling one where he's going to try to meet like his great 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 grandfather who was like a clipper ship captain.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. And he could also visit the Old West at the same time, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know, but.
But, like, people just know him from, like, Not the Bees or whatever. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but, like, go see, like, Birdie. And go see him, like, pour his heart out to Matthew Modine in this movie that, like, nobody's seen. You can see, like, this guy is great at what he does. And, like, yeah, he started making bad movies. But, like, that shouldn't reflect poorly on, like, his literal decades of greatness.
I think I've said it at every single marathon except for the one that he came. Because these things sell out so fast. And I think people think it's going to be some sort of laugh riot. And I'm like,
right.
Hey, if any of you came here to laugh at a Nicolas Cage movie, there's the fucking door. I'll refund your ticket. I'm here to watch Nicolas Cage movies and love them. And if you don't want to be here and appreciate these all with me, I don't want to be around you.
I mean, when we started this, I was listening to other podcasts who did Cage stuff, and like they would be like making fun of the movies or like talking about how bad they are. And like, we're not going to like call some shitty movie like a great movie, but like we're going to try to find the positive in it. And like, you know, it's still something that he's doing that he cares about on some level. And like, we want to be positive. And it just, I don't understand
like
why people, like, I mean, it's, I guess it's where the internet is right now, but like this ironic, I'm watching bad movies, or I'm watching movies and hoping they're bad so I can make fun of them. Like, no, like, watch these movies and, like, hope they're good and just, like, sort of cherish them and share them with people.
Exactly. You're doing the Lord's work.
Well, thank you. And so are you. I mean, everything you're doing is the Lord's work. So, I mean, that's just, you know.
I'm just, it's all selfishly motivated.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so is this. I mean, like,
so is this. We just want to watch these movies.
Yeah, we just want to watch Cage movies. And, like, you know, even if nobody's listening, the fact that, like, you know, Mike and I are talking to each other and talking to, like, people who also care about this shit, like, that's all that I care about.
The same for me. Well, yes. We are cut from the same cloth, friends.
I appreciate it. So, do you have any other last thoughts about either, you know, Mom and Dad or Cage or anything? Any parting wisdom?
Parting wisdom. I'll tell you a fun little tidbit.
Okay.
And I don't know how 100% accurate this is, but I assume and believe it to be true. But it is the greatest mistake that I think every single Nicolas Cage fan makes.
Okay.
It's not going to be profound, but it is going to be enlightening. Every single time that I got a email from Nicolas Cage or from his manager, he would sign it Nick, N-I-C-K.
Oh, really?
Mind blown, right?
Whoa.
That is crazy.
The world has been calling him NIC for his entire life, and nobody has ever cared to bother.
Well, what drives me crazy is when people spell his name with an H in the middle. I'm like, do you not care even about the most basic fact about him? But N-I-C-K is, wow.
No. I'm actually a big fan of Nicholas Cage. Sorry, I didn't have anything more incredible to say.
No. But that is,
interesting.
That's changed my mind about so many things. Or, I mean, this one thing.
We've got to change the podcast now.
I mean, really?
I mean, Mike and I were talking, like, the new one that we're doing after we did Keanu, we're now doing Charlize, like, you know, he mentioned earlier. And I've spelled her name Charlie so many times just because it's, like, natural. It's more natural to type. And I'm like, oh, no, I gotta make sure I spell her name right if we're doing a podcast about her. You know,
you guys calling that the Throne Zone?
We're calling it Watch the Throne.
Okay. Comfortable with that.
We had Throne Zone as an idea, but then, so what, we named the podcast, put out the art about it, and then before we even recorded the first episode, we're like, oh, she pronounces her last name Theron. So it's like, we're already wrong. Like, we're lying to the audience in just the name of the show.
But
so,
we're sticking with it.
And you're sticking with the NIC on the Nicolas Cage?
Well, we don't really, I mean, well, I don't know that we ever call him
a little
him
more
Nick.
Flexible on that.
we're not that, we've never met him, we're not that informal with him.
And this is the flagship show, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll have to see.
But yeah, so thank you so much for being on this podcast, for doing all the Lord's work you're doing in bringing Cage movies to the masses, for programming Fantastic Fest and everything else that's great in the Austin Alamo. And, you know, if you're ever back up in Yonkers for anything, just let us know and we will come up and trust your faith and opinion in things.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Thank you very much for having me. It was an esteemed honor.
Well, so for all things Cage Club, all 90 episodes of this and all the other shows that we've done, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or @cageclubpod on Twitter. Find everything we've done. Everything's up there to listen to for free. Go check out the stuff. You know, if you live in a town with a draft house, go to the draft house because they always do great things, whether or not Greg's programming them. So go check that out. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Greg McLennan. We'll see you next time on Cage Club.
Sawzall. Music. Sawzall.